Lectionary Lab Live is recorded in the studios of the 405 Oxford Group, Gainesville, Florida, and Brasstown, North Carolina, a Two Bubbas and a Bible production.
Welcome, everybody, to the Lectionary Lab Live. I'm John Fairless. I'm here with my Bubba, Delmer Chilton. Say hey, Bubba.
Hey, Bubba.
We're always a little bit of here and there. I'm home in Gainesville today. You're on the road being official, as most Lutherans are doing this time of the year there. Little Senate assembly going on this week.
Yeah, I'm kind of overdoing it. You know, the church, one of the churches I serve is in the North Carolina Synod, and I'm the interim there on a contract basis. I also do some work under call from the Southeastern Synod. So I was in Greensboro, North Carolina for the North Carolina Lutheran gathering last weekend, mm-hmm. and now I'm in Birmingham this weekend, and I've had about all I can stand of official Lutheran meetingness.
Yeah.
Person's good, but meeting is just a lot.
Yeah, nothing against your Lutheran brothers and sisters, or against meetings per se, but there is a limit, right?
About 30 years ago, I had a little three-point circuit, Methodist circuit in North Carolina, and my father-in-law came to visit. He went to the sunrise service, and then he went to all three of my churches, heard the same sermon three times, because he knew people in all the churches through his tobacco business. And right. That afternoon we got home for lunch, and he looked at his wife. He said, "Gene, I don't believe we need to go to church till about July. I'm about churched up." Well, I'm about assembled up.
You're assembled up. Well, that's good. Well, let us assemble ourselves and look at some texts for this week. These are the texts for the third Sunday after Pentecost, June the 14th, 2015. As we most often do when we're in ordinary time, we are not dealing on the show today with the first couple of texts, the complimentary track or continuous reading, however you may term that, but we'll pick it up today with Ezekiel, Psalm 92, little Paul in 2 Corinthians, and then the gospel text from Mark chapter 4 today. Bubba, what would you like to say about getting ready to preach?
Well, there's one primary theme running through this, and one secondary theme, I think. The primary theme is about God produces the growth, not us. We don't make it happen. You look at the text from Ezekiel, we'll go a little deeper there, but it takes that sprig, and it grows into a large cedar tree. You have in Psalm about sow for the house of the Lord. It will flourish in the courts of God. You know, God produces all of this. In Corinthians, there's this great text in which it talks about, we walk by faith, and walking by faith has to do with it's not us. We trust in God no matter what's going on around us. And of course, the two parables in the gospel about sowing and it grows, or a tiny mustard seed and a big plant. So it's about God producing. And the question then comes, what are we to do while God's doing God's great acts?
Yeah. What's our part?
What's our part? And the second part is undercurrent theme here that's always running through when you're talking about the kingdom of God is reversals. You know, I like the in verse 24, I will bring low the high tree, I'll make high the low tree. You know, this is picked up later in the Magnificat very most strongly, but it's always over and over kind of this thing when God acts, the way we thought the world was gets flipped.
That's it. And
there's great reversals to be watching for in all these texts.
Yeah. Some folks say Ezekiel knew Isaiah's work, and you've got valleys being raised and mountains being brought low. So you're right. The reversal texts are an important feature to pay attention to in Scripture.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about old Ezekiel. I like reading Ezekiel.
Yep. Ezekiel, this comes from the time Ezekiel was taken off into the captivity at the time of the exile. And so it's around 600 BC, somewhere along in there. And the first part of this chapter, 17, verses 1 through 21, is kind of a pronouncement of judgment on Israel. And it's done in the terms of a fable. It's kind of a story, you know, and then you think it through. You've got verses 3 through 10. You got the eagle, that's Nebuchadnezzar, and you got the cedar, that's the Davidic dynasty line, and the vine in that story is the people of Israel. And then you have the 11 through 20 or so. It's the play out of this. But then it shifts in our text, 22 through 24, to a pronouncement of salvation, a messianic kind of thing. Because out of these ruins it's been talking about, it takes a sprig from the top of cedar, just a little sprig, and from that will grow a new tree, a new dynasty, a new Israel. So it's ruin and renewal.
Right.
There'll be growth and flourishing. So it's kind of that theme of look around. Yes, this is what's happened. We deserved it. This is the punishment, but God's not done. Out of the midst of this, with this tiny sprig on the high mountain, I will raise up.
Yeah. It is worth doing a little work and digging to read the rest of this chapter,
right,
especially
right.
Pastors. We need to understand where this, because it is lifted out of a much larger context. It's, I love the opening of the chapter there. Not only is this sort of a parable or a fable, that word can be translated, a riddle.
Right.
It's
right.
In the form of a riddle. Here, you need to kind of figure this out. And there are multiple layers going on with Ezekiel here. And if you just do a little digging into the background of what was happening in this time, and God had actually through Jeremiah told the people, look, I will use Babylon. I will use them to preserve my people. And the king that gets snapped off the cedar tree here, Zedekiah, he's not much on believing Jeremiah,
right.
And he'd rather do it his way, and tries to go behind Nebuchadnezzar's back and make a deal with Egypt. And that's the two eagles that we got going on here, and just really sort of fouled it up. And then comes this wonderful passage when God says, look, I'll break off the twig and I'll transplant it. And remember, it is I who, as you said earlier, I bring low the high tree and I make high the low tree. And if it's a green tree, I can dry it up. And if it's a dry tree, I can make it flourish.
Well, and so working with this, this is good for those of us who find ourselves saying, well, things just aren't as good as they used to be. Boy, we live in interesting times, and we start talking about how bad things are as if it's ever been perfect. Sometime it was perfect, and now it's not.
There was a good time, and now it's not.
It's bad.
Yeah, right.
And the scripture lesson, particularly the history of Israel and walking through this in the prophets, reminds us that over and over again, there is this cycle, and we keep trying to fix it. And the reality is what we're called to do is be faithful to the God of Israel, or to the gospel, to be faithful in loving, kind, and serving God, and trusting God to work with the other. And the more we try to bring the kingdom in by our own design,
right,
the worse it gets. And these kind of texts are a good reminder to us as we say, oh my God, the church is dying. It's in decline. Did you see the Pew report and all this kind of stuff? And then the next thing is, well, let me tell you what to do. There's always going to be somebody who can tell you in seven easy steps, biblical principles for how to fix this. Well, here's a biblical principle. You can't fix this.
You can't fix it. And besides, it's God's.
It's God's. Our job is, our calling is to be faithful.
That's it. I want to put in a little plug here. Some of you have already taken a look at our lectionary lessons, a feature we're trying here for a few weeks, and designed primarily for the Christian Education Hour to sit around, and those of you who like to have an opportunity to talk through the text and study a little bit, share insights, questions, etc. We have another lesson up this week titled, Who's in Charge Here? And that's this whole thing we're talking about. Who's really in charge here? We are stewards. We are given a charge to tend the church, but it's not ours, and the growth is not ours. And ultimately, most of the problems aren't really ours, other than, as we'll consider in a moment, looking at the parables Jesus gives us. What's our job? What's our responsibility in taking care of these things? So anyhow, give us a click if you hadn't already, and see the teaching video there on YouTube, and download the lesson sheet if you'd like. Just had to get that little plug in. What about moving on to Psalm 92, Bubba?
Well, Psalm 92 is a Sabbath psalm. Is one. There were different psalms for different days, and this is a Sabbath psalm. And one of the things you'll note if you do the entire psalm is that seven times the name Yahweh occurs. the seven times on the seventh day. It's a Sabbath psalm. And the first part of the way we have it laid out here, the verses picked 1 through 4 and then 12 through 15. 1 through 4 is praising God for what God has done. You know, it is a good thing to give thanks to the Lord, to sing praise to your name, O Most High. It is indeed right and salutary that we should at all times and all places give thanks and praise, is the opening line to most prefaces in the liturgical traditions for a communion prayer. And it comes out of this psalm here, that kind of idea. And it's thanking God and calling people to praise because of the acts and works. In verse 4, why are we praising God? Because what God has done, what the works God has done. And then it moves on 12 through 15 and says, as a result of these works, because, therefore, the righteous will flourish. Those who are planted will flourish. Bear fruit in old age. I like that.
Yeah, there's still hope for us.
Shall be green and succulent. They'll show how upright the Lord is. So many times we fall into an if-then. This is another part of this whole theme. If we do this, then God will bless us. If we do this, then the kingdom will grow. If we do this, then this will happen. This reverses the pattern. It says, because God, we praise God because God has done these acts. God has done these works. Because, therefore, because of God's works, the righteous will flourish, will spread like a cedar, et cetera, et cetera. So because, therefore, that's the dynamic. And our call is to respond joyously to what God has done and imitate what God has done, be imitators of Christ, and carry on the gospel and carry on the work of God in love and work, and it flourishes.
That's it. Our job is to brag on God, and that's what this psalm does. And I just have to point out in verse 14, the NRSV doesn't have succulent. It says that you're green and full of sap.
Well, I changed that just because.
You never been told you're full of sap, have you, Bob?
One of the interesting things as we dialogue, I work off of the chanting text.
Yes, right.
Psalms for the Evangelical Lutheran Worship Book. And John's working off the NRSV, and it's interesting to see how those translations are different.
There you go.
But part of the liturgical choices are what scans well, you know, makes it easier to chant. But also sometimes the translation choices open up a whole new thing. And this is kind of one of those moments to remind people that it's good to check a lot of resources. And I haven't forgotten you've asked me if I was full of sap. I've been full of a lot full of things, and one of those words starts with S, but it wasn't sap.
Okay. Yeah. You make a good point. Part of just we as pastors being diligent in the study, particularly when we've handled texts multiple times, get back and get a fresh reading. Go for a different translation. And anymore, with the ability to go online and pull up multiple translations easily, it's a good thing to do. And let that translation help us possibly open a new door to something we haven't seen in a while. I like it. Well, the epistle today, 2 Corinthians chapter 5. So we are always confident, not necessarily in ourselves. What is it that we are confident, and who is it that we are confident in here?
Well, first of all, I have to give what I think are now defined as dad jokes. They just used to be called groaners. Verse 9 is a baseball joke. It's what a baseball player says to their manager.
Oh.
So whether we are at home or away, we make it our aim to please him.
There you go. Ka-doom.
Ka-doom. Oh, well, now back to what you're talking about. Verse 6, as you said, always confident. And verse 7, walk by faith, not by sight. We have confidence. And that confidence there is a kind of a piece of what it means to have faith, that trust. Mm-hmm. And it's not confident in your own ability. I mean, I was looking over a piece the other day that was talking about the testing that happens internationally on high school students, you know, and we always finish the United States kind of 25 or 30th in the country, but we always finish first in our belief in our science ability.
We think we're the best.
And William Bennett said, you know, we don't do much at teaching math, but we sure do a good job of teaching self-esteem.
Right.
Now, the particular essay I wrote said, but actually that is helpful because we are entrepreneurs, you know, we step mm-hmm. up and we lead the world in some technology developments, you know, and so that kind of thing. It was an interesting essay, but this is not about that kind of self-confidence, mm-hmm. confidence in self. This is confidence that you trust the Lord. And this is not I just can't do anything. I just have to let God take care of it. Mm-hmm. It is a relational confidence. It is a relational trust that you're in relationship with a God who loves you, who cares about you, and works with you. And you do your part, trusting that whatever happens, it'll end up with God. This is why this language of Paul's, it's sometimes so confusing to us about in the body or out of the body or whatever. He's ultimately trying to say, whatever happens, I trust that God is in control and I will do my part, not worrying about how it comes out. We're back to that who's in charge.
Mm-hmm.
His confidence is that God's in charge. Therefore, I can act without worrying about my failures. I love the end there where he talks about the cross reveals Christ's redeeming love, and it altered Paul's perspective forever. I think that we regard no one from a human point of view in the NRSV.
Mm-hmm, right.
That change, the human point of view is you measure whether their ability, their skill, their worthiness. I mean, this is he's writing in a culture in which, you know, who you're child of, who you're related
right.
to, what's your status, what's your ability, all of this is what matters. And he said, that's the human point of view.
Yeah.
We have to regard everybody from the divine human point of view, which is everybody is a child of God, mm-hmm. beloved of God, and we treat them that way.
Yeah. Yeah. We used to talk about it. Tell me who your people are.
Yep.
You know, and you'd pigeonhole somebody sort of, you know, from that line of descent. I am interested in this, and it's going to carry us over certainly and get clarified as we read the gospel stories for today. But this fine line, okay, we're confident, not overconfident in ourselves. And neither is this, as you say, a false confidence that says, oh, well, I just can't do anything. Verse 7 says, we walk by faith. It doesn't say we sit and do nothing by faith. It doesn't say we're inert by faith. There is an effort required
right.
from us, but it's
right.
a confidence in the God who supports us, the God who is preparing the path. It may get a little dark. It may be a little bumpy, and we've all been there where we're having to walk in an unfamiliar place at night, or I've got a set of steps. I have an office. My half of the Lectionary Lab Studios in Gainesville, Florida here is in a little office above my garage, and there are steps down, and I'm often working at night, and I turn out the light, and I go, now I know those steps are there. Okay, I know that step is there, but boy, taking that first one in the dark is a little strange sometimes.
Yeah.
I'm not walking by sight. I know it's there. So what is our part if we want to affirm that God's in charge, God's responsible, though, what is my part? And
it's a because, therefore, and it's,
right?
it's one of those, and I'm going to make a kind of growing up analogy, if I will. If
All
you
right.
will. And not most people aren't farm people, but I was a farm person,
mm-hmm.
and we worked on the farm with my dad and my mom. And I worked for them and worked with them. This is it. I worked with them. My dad was in charge. I knew that he would make sure everything was going to be okay. I was 12 or 13. If I messed up, he'd make sure, you know, the crop was going to be
right.
fine. I was working. I was doing my part. I knew I had to do it. But I was not afraid. Okay? I was not afraid of my performance. I was confident in what I was doing, and I wasn't worried that it would fail. When I was about 13 or 14, my dad quit farming, went to work in the mill, and began to hire out. The people liked that my dad had taught his sons how to do the old-fashioned farm work, you know, that we did around there with tobacco and stuff. And I was always anxious whether I was performing correctly, because I wasn't in relationship with these people. I had to earn it. Mm-hmm. They didn't know me. I didn't know exactly how they did things. It was a different thing. We are not hired hands. We are not having to earn the paycheck at the end of the day. We are in the family of God, working with God, and we can be confident. We're active. We're a part. It's what's going on, but it's a different kind of feeling about our involvement there and a different confidence about the relationship with the Master.
I think that says it well. The language we've read recently, we're heirs with of God, joint heirs with Christ. When you're part of the family, it's just different. It really is. Well, let's move on then. You've already led us into the farm analogies and agricultural expressions were favorites of Jesus. So many people depended on agriculture in these days. And as you're taking something like the kingdom of God and trying to explain it to folks, most of whom were not what we would consider literate, how do you do that? We'll talk about something they know. So let's get into this gospel today.
Well, one of the things you have to know from a farm perspective, although farming was different then, nobody would do what Jesus describes in the first
part. Right.
So he is making one of those things where his listeners are going, well, that's idiotic.
That's stupid.
You don't just plant it and then wait and go back and harvest it. It doesn't work that way. But he's making the point that no matter what you do, you can't make it grow. Mm-hmm. You know, and there's a joke I saw on the internet, Facebook or something not too long ago about a contest. The scientists had gotten themselves an audience with God to say that they didn't need him anymore, that they could create life. And God said, well, prove it to me. And so they could produce life from dirt, just like he did. And he said, well, show me. So they went, reached down and grabbed a handful of dirt. God said, no, get your own dirt.
There you go.
And then how far back does it go?
Right.
That's his point with this story. No matter what you do, there's a point at which you can't make it happen. There's a mystery level that happens and you can't get further back. And, you know, you've been doing the work with quantum and physics and all of that, but there is the deeper you go into the issue of origins, the deeper the mystery gets.
Absolutely.
You know, you can't unpeel it. It's like one of the, an Asian myth about the world on the back of a turtle. And you say, what's under that turtle? Well, there's another
turtle.
And then they say, well, what? And then they asked again, they said, well, it's turtles all the way down. Where is down? Mm-hmm. And with the Big Bang, it's the same thing, or creation. So this is about that mystery that's at the bottom of this.
Right. It is a wonderful metaphor, and it leaves perfectly open the question of what the farmer does. This text doesn't say he does absolutely nothing. No. We see that he sleeps and night after day, and he's waiting, and so it may be a well-tended field. That's fine. The point is, no matter what effort the farmer makes, the growing in and of itself, what's happening down there between the seed and the soil is not something that's in his control.
This is not an encouragement of quietism and just sit and pray and let it happen.
Right.
It is to say, don't be anxious. Mm-hmm. The ultimate growth of the kingdom, most of what we're doing is seed planting.
Right.
And, you know, one of the things that that if you get to, like John and I, to a certain age and have been doing this since you were babies, which we
of course, yes.
We were baby preachers, so I'm coming up on
preacher boys.
Preacher boys.
We were just preacher boys in my tradition.
I'm coming up on 40 years next year.
Yep.
And I start getting, and Facebook's a wonderful thing, and I start hearing about things that have happened. And people will say, you remember when you started us doing this? And I'm like, I don't even remember that. It's 25 years ago. And it's bloomed into something. Other things I was real excited about that just died.
Because
it was my idea. Mm-hmm. And it's just wonderful to see that. That's what it's talking about, is don't get anxious about ministry in terms of results. I'm not saying don't plan, don't work your work, you know, plan your work and work your plan. But like underneath it, you just got to say, but we're planting seeds.
That's right. Who's God's this?
God's going to bring the kingdom in. And so you shift over to the mustard seed.
Right. I was going to say, that makes really a perfect setup. And you get the brilliance of Jesus' stories here, or at least as Mark has arranged them. That makes the second half just a perfect complement.
Yeah, and so you end up with this little, the tiny mustard seed, and people worry about a mustard seed, and it's not really the, it's not the point. You're getting too literal. There is a tiny, mustard seed is tiny, and it's the biggest shrub. It's really big. It's not as big as a cedar of Lebanon, but it's big. And his point is, from a very little thing that seems nothing to us, God produces the kingdom, and it happens. And it happens in ways we could never imagine. That we're not in control of, but we plant our seed. And so one of the things for us to recognize, not only as preachers, but as congregations, is we're seed planters. That's what we do. And you'll find out later and you're like, wow, people will say, well, still the other things besides organizational things is someone will say to me, I'll go back for an anniversary or a homecoming, as we, most churches in the South will call it a homecoming, that annual event. And I go, we'll be invited back to preach somewhere, and somebody will say, you really changed my life. And I'm like, wow. I said, that sermon you preached about, and oh, thank you. And I walk away. My wife said, what did you say? I said, I have no idea. I planted a seed. That soil was ready. I don't even remember.
I'm thinking, they got me mixed up with that other preacher they had.
They got me mixed up with somebody else. My daughter heard that sermon and went to Africa on a mission trip. I'm like, really?
Yeah.
What did I say? There's this cartoon that Leadership Magazine had one time where the two clergy, they have the collar on. That's a nice little cartoon way of identifying these are clergy without having to do anything else. Table is running over with money. People are coming in and throwing more money on this table. It's just flowing out of offering plates. And the two ministers are standing there, and the older one is saying to the younger one, read it again. I must have said something.
Oh, it's completely beyond us sometimes.
You can't even figure out looking at why it happened. The last thing I wanted to say about this is, this is another one of my bad jokes, but verse 34. He did not speak to them except in parables, but he explained everything in private to his disciples. And now the Bubbas have explained everything to you all in public.
Okay, I was just going to say that reminds me of how much like the disciples we really are. Jesus had to take them through it a second time. Saying, now look, guys. Okay,
and a third. Let me tell you. Honestly, we weren't there. We may be totally wrong.
We could be. Who knows? That's it.
That's a good Lutheran line. On the other hand, what do I know?
What do I know? I will say, if by chance there are any of you that have never seen a mustard seed or a mustard shrub, I love that translation. It's the greatest of all shrubs. Again, I've got some visuals on lectionary lessons this week. Click on it and you'll see there both a picture of the seed. It is indeed tiny, and a picture of a mustard shrub as it grows to this day in the Holy Land. I found it quite interesting, and it really makes the passage stand out. Bubba, there's good stuff here. I think there's plenty to grab hold of, and we wish everybody well as you're thinking about preaching this week. Any other final comments? Any other words of wisdom?
Well, you know, I've been pondering. Last week, you know, we made jokes about, you know, Beavis and Butthead. It was in relation to Beelzebul and Beelzebul and the Lord of the Flies and Dung and all that. But I've been thinking that maybe we ought to offer an alternative show, Beavis and Butthead Explain the Bible. Well, there might be an audience for that.
That one just went over real big, I can tell. But we better get out of here before we do any more dangerous. Well, not much left for us to do other than to tell everybody bye.
Everybody bye.
Put your hands together!
Lectionary Lab Live is a Two Bubbas and a Bible production. Our opening theme is Mama Told Me by Frank Anea. We go out this session with Lord of the Harvest, performed by Fred Hammond.
Let me hear the people of God say,
Hell.